many people are a little worried about what will happen to them with the digital euro. Can you encourage them? Why is the digital euro good for people like you and me?
A digital currency, where it has been piloted, and there is only one which is clearly now launched in a very small country, but it is piloted on a fairly large scale in China, is of use and of service to all citizens. So it is not something that is good for the elite, or is good for the young, or is good for some versus others. If it is well done, and if it is well implemented, it would be of service to all citizens.
Hi, Steve here. No, I'm afraid it will not be of service to all citizens, but it will be of complete service to the Antichrist ruler of this world once he takes over.
The UK has just concluded a trial of a personal carbon dioxide allowance, which, as the name implies, calculates how much carbon dioxide is produced annually in the UK, and then divides that per person per day, then works out by how much that figure needs to fall in order to meet net zero goals. We have the white paper in my office that informed the trial. The whole concept of a daily carbon dioxide allowance is now out there for all to see. Conspiracy theory no more. I bloody told you so. To anyone who is advised by data and empirical evidence, not mass formation psychosis, carbon dioxide is the gas of life, necessary for all life on Earth. It's plant food. The more CO2 produced, the more food, plants and trees the Earth is blessed with. The climate change scam is not founded on science, it's founded on feelings. It has become a religion for those who consider themselves above religion. Quick maths means your daily food allowance of 2,600 grams of carbon dioxide would be enough to buy 26 grams of red meat, one mouthful, and then eat nothing else that day. I raised this years ago in this chamber when the World Economic Forum first called for a limit on red meat of 30 grams a day. Another conspiracy theory that's come true. A cooked breakfast will have to be half the size to squeeze into your daily allowance. Again, with nothing left over for food for the rest of the day. Your daily allowance will cover two plant-based meals a day because predatory billionaires like BlackRock and Bill Gates are buying up farmland to grow the cereals and soy needed for plant-based meals. So not surprisingly, the whole thing is rigged towards the products they can exploit for their own financial gain, including plant-based fake meat, which contains 20 chemical ingredients, most are shared with pet food. The World Economic Forum at Davos has hosted speakers calling for this system to include carbon dioxide credit trading, so rich people can live their lives exactly as they do right now, and poor people can skimp on food, clothing, travel, electricity and entertainment, and sell their excess credits to rich people. The rules never apply to the people that make them. The war on livestock is a war on good nutrition based on a lie, which is designed to enrich billionaires.
John writes, "Then I saw the lamb open one of the seals. And I heard one of the four living creatures say with a loud voice like thunder, 'Come.' I looked and there was a white horse. Its rider held a bow. A crown was given to him, and he went out as a conqueror in order to conquer." For centuries, many believe this is the triumphant return of Christ, but what if the original Greek text reveals a more sinister truth? A truth hidden in the writer's specific bow and crown that changes how we see the very start of the apocalypse. The closer you look, the more this perfect picture starts to crack. This writer isn't Christ at all, but his perfect diabolical imitation, the Antichrist. This view argues the writer is a masterful deception. He's a counterfeit, which is why he mimics the real Christ so closely on a white horse. He looks like a figure of peace, but his real mission is to deceive the world, consolidate power, and set the stage for the destruction to come. Think about the sequence of events. The Lamb, Jesus, is the one in heaven opening the seals. So, does it make sense for Jesus to open a seal that sends himself on a mission? And look at what comes next. The three horsemen, who immediately follow, bring war, famine, and death. Does a triumphant Christ really lead a parade of such catastrophic disasters? Or is it more likely this first rider unleashes the chaos, that his false peace is the direct cause of the war, famine, and death that follow? This interpretation frames the first seal not as an act of grace, but as the beginning of the Great Tribulation. It's kicked off by a political or religious figure who promises the world unity and salvation, but only delivers ruin. And the most compelling evidence for this isn't just the sequence of events. It's hidden in the original Greek words used for the rider's gear. The text says a crown was given unto him. Now, when you see and I hear crown, we think of one thing, royalty, a king's crown. But the Greek of the New Testament had two different words for crown, and the difference is lost in most English translations. The first word is diadema, or diadem. This is the royal crown, the crown of a sovereign king or emperor. It's the undisputed symbol of kingly authority. When the dragon Satan appears in Revelation 12, he wears a diadem too. Google shows us the word diadem is an interchangeable noun meaning corona. But that's not the word used for our writer here in Revelation 6. His crown is a Stephanos. A Stephanos wasn't a king's crown. It was a victor's wreath woven from leaves. It was the prize given to a winning general or an Olympic athlete. It represents victory and achievement, but not inherent royal authority. But it also translates that which forms an encirclement. This is a critical clue. The rider of the white horse has won a victory. He's earned a prize, but he isn't a king by birthright. He was given his victor's wreath, which implies his authority was granted, not innate. This is a huge contrast to the true Christ, who wears the many diadems of absolute sovereign rule. The Stephanos points not to the King of Kings, but to a very successful conqueror who won his power, maybe through politics or popular support, rather than possessing it by divine right. The second clue is the rider's weapon. The text says he had a bow. The Greek word is toxon, but there's something obviously missing. The verse mentions a bow, but says nothing about arrows. That silence is deafening. A conqueror with a bow, but no arrows? What's that about? The Greek word toxon literally translates to the simplest of fabrics. And the Greek word is toxon. Many scholars suggest this symbolizes a bloodless conquest, a victory won not through open war, but through threats, slick diplomacy, and political pressure. It's a conquest by treaty, by a false promise of peace that lulls the world into submission. The rider doesn't need to fire a single shot because his enemies just surrender to his influence. This method, domination through peaceful deception, is a classic description of how the Antichrist is expected to rise. The prophet Daniel spoke of a figure who would destroy many by peace. He's a master of intrigue who unites the world under a banner of false security before showing his true colors. A bow without arrows is the perfect symbol for this kind of insidious conquest. There's also a fascinating linguistic shadow here. While the primary meaning of the Greek word toxon is simply bow, it's related to the word toxicon, which is where we get our word toxic. Toxicon, pharmacon, was the poison used to tip arrows. This isn't the main argument, but it's a chilling hint that this rider's conquest, even if it looks peaceful, is poisonous, corrupting, and ultimately deadly. So let's lay out the evidence from our case file. On one hand, you have the Christ theory. It rests almost entirely on the horse being white and a general idea of conquest. On the other hand, you have the Antichrist theory. The evidence here is specific and rooted in the text. First, the context. The Lamb is the one opening the seal, and this rider is immediately followed by war, famine, and death. Second, the crown. He wears a Stephanos, a victor's wreath, not the diadem of a true king like the one Christ wears later. And third, the weapon. He carries a toxon, a bow, but with no arrows mentioned, suggesting a conquest through false peace and intimidation. When you weigh the evidence, the conclusion becomes pretty clear. The rider on the white horse is not Jesus, the Christ. He's an imposter. He's the counterfeit Messiah, the Antichrist, or at the very least, the spirit of Antichrist moving through the world in a wave of deceptive conquest. He offers a false utopia, a peace achieved without God, a victory won by deceit. He is the first devastating judgment unleashed on a world that has rejected the true Lamb. Why does any of this matter? Because if we mistake this deceptive conqueror for Christ, we'll be looking for the wrong signs. We'll see a false peace as the start of a new golden age, and we'll be totally unprepared for the chaos that follows. The first seal is a warning, the opening act of the end times. This isn't a great revival, but a great deception. But this is only the beginning. This conqueror on the white horse with his bloodless, toxic victory is immediately followed by a second rider, a rider on a fiery red horse who is given a great sword with one terrifying job, to take peace from the earth so that people will kill one another. The false peace is over, and the true cost of the first rider's conquest is about to come due. If you want to continue this investigation into the red horse of war, subscribe and hit the notification bell. You won't want to miss what happens when the Lamb opens the second seal. Think about it.